Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Bailey's Harbor was recently named the prettiest town in Wisconsin by a national magazine. We'll talk to a travel writer and ask you to make the case for your favorite town. First, a federal judge ruled late last week that the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA, must be reinstated. That decision adds to a list of federal court rulings in favor of DACA, which prevents the deportation of people who are brought into the country illegally as minors. The Trump administration announced it was phasing the program out last year. It's been in legal limbo ever since. Hiroshi Motomura is a professor at the UCLA School of Law, where he focuses on immigration and citizenship. His books include Immigration Outside the Law. Hiroshi, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, remind us of the current status of people who are protected under DACA. There's been so much legal back and forth. It's hard to keep track of where they stand.
It is hard to keep track. Right now, of course, there are people who have DACA status, which protects them from deportation proceedings. And the current situation is that DACA renewals are being processed, and that's by court order. But right now, there are at least four courts looking at the situation, and actually five, and that means that things are very much up in the air, and I think we're going to see some clarity in the month of August, but it remains to be seen what that is going to look like.
And now we've got this new court ruling that prompted us to talk about this, a federal judge saying, yeah, Trump administration, you have to keep doing DACA, but there's some time to appeal. What is at stake in this particular decision?
Well, actually, the case we're talking about, which is the one from Washington, D.C., it's a federal district court in Washington, D.C., is really the fourth court to rule on this issue. So in a sense, it didn't add a whole – well, it added one important thing, which I'll mention in a second, but it was really the third court that has told the federal government that it must continue to process DACA renewals. And so in that sense, it didn't add anything to what a court in California had said and what a court in New York had already said. One of the important things, though, about the D.C. court decision from last week is it ordered the federal government to take DACA applications from people who were not renewing, but in fact had never had DACA before. And so this would go to the benefit of young people who, for example, just became old enough to apply. And so so this is an important thing, of course, for those folks. But it is the third court that has told the federal government that it did not rescind DACA in a lawful and proper way. So that's what happened in D.C. It is, however, the third court, and so in that sense, there are three courts telling the federal government, no, you can't do it this way. You cannot stop DACA.
What has been the federal government's argument in this case that just got this ruling?
Well, the federal government's position, and this dates back to September of 2017, the federal government's position is principally that it is rescinding DACA because DACA was illegal. And the three courts have stepped in and said, no, that you can't stop DACA, you can't rescind DACA, have said, no, that's not right. I mean, you haven't shown us that DACA is illegal. You haven't really reasoned that out. You didn't really explain that. And just the risk that it might be illegal isn't enough for you to stop the process. And so it's basically saying that it leaves open the question whether the federal government might be able to rescind DACA somehow in some other way. But they're telling the federal government, you can't rescind it by saying without explaining very much that it's illegal.
Now, there is a chance it could be ruled illegal, I guess. Republican attorneys general from around the country have a court challenge. I think it's in Texas, right? And that could be part of this August series of rulings on this.
That's right. There are four courts, as I mentioned, have heard challenges to the rescission of DACA. Those are in California, New York, Maryland, and the District of Columbia. The fifth case is the one you mentioned. It's a little bit different. It's filed by states, some states, led by Texas. That case is filed in a federal court in Texas. And that case is set for a hearing next, I guess it is this Wednesday, August 8th. And so Texas and other states are trying to get that judge to say, no, DACA is was properly rescinded by the federal government. And we'll get a ruling on that, presumably at some point. I assume not in the courtroom on Wednesday, but sometime in the next few weeks. And so we have the prospect of conflicting federal courts here and the federal government trying to figure out exactly how to sort this out. If, in fact, there, for example, you got three judges telling the federal government it must continue to take renewals. You have one judge who said you must take new applications. If the federal judge in Texas comes up and says, well, you can no longer take renewals or applications, then you've obviously have a conflict. The federal government has asked preliminarily the judge in Texas, if it's basically said to the judge in Texas, if you order us to stop taking renewals, please don't let that order go into effect for 2 weeks so that we can sort out the various conflicts and possibly even go to the U.S. Supreme Court for some clarity on what we should be doing.
Hiroshi Monomura is with us, professor at the UCLA School of Law, talking about the latest on DACA, a new court ruling, more on the way. Hiroshi, it could, as you say, be a situation where some courts say enforce DACA and one federal judge says don't. In the interim, we're in limbo until we get that sorted out, if that happens?
Well, speaking about this practically, the government has been taking renewals, and that continues to be the case. And so you have people filing for renewals, people who have DACA and who are having, looks like DACA status would expire in some period of time in the future. And so that's continuing to be the situation. And so we have people who are filing, knowing that their ability to file may be ended in mid-August. But of course, that depends on the situation. The pros and cons of filing are very individualized. But we have right now the government processing renewal applications. The other background thing that's important to keep in mind here is that these lawsuits are about whether or not the federal government acted properly and went through the proper procedures and gave adequate reasons for ending this government program. That's part of general law about whether the government can stop a program that people have relied on for some period of time. In this particular case, we have about 800,000 people involved here. And so this is the question of whether the government rescinded DACA properly. The judge last Friday made it clear as a general statement that the government could go through a different process, could give different and more adequate reasons for rescinding DACA, and that might pass muster. What the judge ruled on Friday is that the government didn't do that in this particular case. And so one interesting thing about this is the government actually didn't try to go through a different procedure, didn't try to give better reasons. The government responded to this particular judge. When the judge said, give me your reasons, I'm going to give you a chance to give me more reasons, the federal government essentially said, well, we gave you our reasons, we're going to elaborate on our reasons, but we're not really changing our reasoning. And the government, that's what the government's position was. On Friday, the judge in the District of Columbia, the federal district court, said, well, all you've really done is repeat what you said before. And I already told you that what you said before isn't adequate, so it's not adequate now.
One possible solution to cut through all the confusion here would be for Congress to pass something clarifying the status of people protected under DACA, right? They could put an end to all these legal arguments, potentially.
That's right. And various bills have been proposed to essentially provide the DACA recipients, so-called dreamers, the undocumented students, with some kind of permanent or semi-permanent relief from their situation. The problem with that is, from a legislative point of view, that any solution for this particular situation with young people brought to this country and without legal status is that that's been caught up in all sorts of other immigration-related issues that include the idea of building a border wall, of funding more immigration enforcement, and also even limiting legal immigration to the United States in terms of completely reshaping the categories. And so it has gotten, it being the DACA situation, has gotten caught up in so many other immigration-related situations, and Congress just hasn't been able to reach any kind of consensus on this because it is, of course, extremely contentious to larger issues especially.
We'll leave it there. Hiroshi, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Hiroshi Motomura, professor at the UCLA School of Law. He focuses on immigration and citizenship. Right now, Wisconsin has lots of beautiful cities, towns, and villages, but if you had to choose just one to call the most picturesque, the most beautiful, what would it be? Architectural Digest magazine recently weighed in by naming the prettiest towns in every state. The winner in Wisconsin was Bailey's Harbor on the Lake Michigan side of Door County. We want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you want to back their play and say, yeah, Bailey's Harbor? Or do you have a different choice for the prettiest town in Wisconsin? Whether it's your hometown or someplace you travel, which place has impressed you the most? What makes it scenic and special? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kevin Revelinsky is also known as the Mad Traveler. He's written 15 books, including Backroads and Byways of Wisconsin. He's with us in the studio. Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me in.
Well, there we have it. Architectural Digest says Bailey's Harbor is the state's prettiest. Tell us a little bit about Bailey's Harbor and the case it could be on that list.
Yeah, it certainly would qualify in any short list, I think, of beautiful towns in Wisconsin. As you said, it's on Lake Michigan. It's protected by sort of a crescent moon bay that faces to the south. So they do get the sunrise in the morning. It's located on Wisconsin 57. So the highway kind of goes right through town there, and it's lined with bed and breakfasts, a few inns, good restaurants. It's a tourist destination, but they like to call it the quiet side of the peninsula. If there is such a thing, it's a very busy place in summer. But I would say it's beautiful. And the article you mentioned said that they were rating things on rich in architecture and also a nature element. So I think the lake qualifies for that.
And then spreading out from Bailey's Harbor, I mean, there's a lot going on in Door County.
Right.
If people want that nearby scenery, even if it isn't quite in the town limits there.
Yeah, and just outside of town is Ridges Sanctuary, which is a really nice natural park for, hiking. And they've got range lights, which is the duet of lighthouses. And also just north of there, Kena Island Lighthouse.
And do you think there are other places in Door County itself that might be at the top of people's lists?
I'm thinking Fish Creek was waking up a little bit annoyed by the article.
Right.
They're on the other side, you know?
I did see, I can't remember who it was, somebody else had a top 10 list of Wisconsin picturesque towns. Fish Creek was on that one. Bailey's
sure.
Harbor wasn't. So I don't know if there's a feud brewing. Yeah,
or they're just taking turns. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, one of them gets the sunrise, one of them gets the sunset. You can enjoy both. They're only about 10 minutes apart. So
now it's tough in Wisconsin, right? Because in some ways you're comparing apples and oranges. In addition to the architecture, which they were talking
right.
about, I mean, do you want a Lake Michigan view, a Green Bay view, Lake Superior, a river, the Mississippi River? There's
right.
like so many different ways to categorize Wisconsin's prettiest cities.
Yeah, and the other one that often gets mentioned is Bayfield, and that's on another Great Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, obviously very beautiful. But what about something like Mineral Point, which is not on a lake, but and not even in the middle of the forest, but it's an historical town. It's got old buildings, thriving art scene, restaurants, a brewery. That certainly would qualify. Or New Glarus, very beautiful Swiss-themed town. That's unusual, something that you don't see anywhere else in the state, really. Well, Monroe might argue with that, but okay.
Yeah, are there things that you look for? I mean, you've traveled a lot, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and you're writing not just with yourself in mind, but other people in mind.
Right.
But what are some of your favorite things? Like, when you are checking out a new community, what are some of the things you are looking for?
Yeah, I'm kind of nostalgic. I like an old downtown. I grew up in Marshfield, Wisconsin. They still have a lot of the downtown buildings are still in place. I love that sort of, it takes you back in time,
mm-hmm.
and usually nowadays those are becoming filled with local shops and trying to bring back the downtown in various places. There have been a few cities that I think are overlooked or maybe worthy of getting on these lists, because you tend to see the same 5 or 10 cities or towns, rather. I think Ashland, Wisconsin, across the bay from Bayfield, has got a lot of potential. They've got those giant murals on all the buildings that are starting to draw people, and they do still have that old downtown. Darlington, Darlington, Wisconsin. I don't know if that's on the tourist map, but they have got a really nice downtown, and they just got a new brewery that took over. It's a coffee shop / brewery, and it's in an old service station. And they've redone that to look like it would have been back in the day, and they've got
a lot of
you know, artifacts and antiques from that era that makes that just a stop all by itself. But little, you know, Pecatonica River runs through town, and Cheese Country Trail ends there, I think, so, or passes through at any rate. So a lot to be done in a tiny little town such as Darlington. Charming place, I would say.
Talking about the prettiest communities in Wisconsin, Kevin Revelinsky is with us. He's the author of a bunch of travel books, including Backroads and Byways of Wisconsin, Architectural Digest. Pick the prettiest community in every state. They say Bailey's Harbor here in Wisconsin. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your nomination for the prettiest, however you want to define that, community in the state. Paul is with us in Marshfield. Paul, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to nominate, Paul?
Well, I've never been to Bailey's Harbor, but I did drive through Cedarburg a couple times.
Cedarburg, yep. That makes frequently makes other lists.
What do you like there, Paul? What caught your eye?
Well, I mean, just the gorgeous downtown. There's, you know, there's a nice little brew pub set along the river there, so if that's your thing, you can sit and enjoy. You know, it's in an old, like, grist mill.
Yeah.
So you can sit and watch the water come down. You know, it's a nice sound, nice views, good beer. So if you like that, that's good. But just, it's a beautiful downtown.
It is nice with the water flowing past that really nice ambiance. And inside, they I think they have an old grist mill wheel, don't they, Paul?
Right there, yeah. You just walk by, you can sit there, and you can see the, you know, the water kind of comes down. It's diverted around from the dam, and still in its natural how it would have been used 100 years ago, and you can see the water flow right in there.
That sounds cool. Paul, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. I like that idea. Him talking about that grist mill and you with restoring that service station, taking that older building and making a cool use out of it, but still respecting the history there.
Exactly. Rather than tearing everything down and starting over, a lot of people are, you know, chosen to revitalize places. I mean, you look at like Titletown up in Green Bay, taking over a train station and then a canning factory. That's really neat. It's a good way to keep some character in the town while bringing something new to the scene.
Let's take another caller. Mike is on the line in Viroqua. Mike, hi.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. What do you want to nominate, Mike?
I want to nominate Coon Valley, Wisconsin.
Coon Valley.
All right. What do you like there?
Hi, how you doing?
Mike, what was your what do you like about Coon Valley?
The Coon Creek, the valleys, it's just a gorgeous place. It's like being in Switzerland.
Okay. Thanks, Mike, for the
Swiss
call.
Town. Hmm.
Yeah, we've got a few of those, right?
Well, that whole area of the state, you know. Other places like Algoma on the lake is nice. They've got that red lighthouse that's out towards your sunrise setting, and a few older buildings there, a winery, a brewery.
Great. Thanks for the suggestion, Mike. We'll go to Stella on the line in Sturgeon Bay. Stella, hi.
Hi. I would like to nominate the town of Rural, R-U-R-A-L.
Right, not just rural Wisconsin in general. There is the town called Rural. Right. And what do you like about to that as a scenic town, Stella?
Well, I don't remember. I think it's on Highway 23, but I'm not sure. When we lived in Marion and went down to Madison, it was on the route down to Madison. And now you have to go off. It's been bypassed, but you have to go off it. What you do is you go in at one end of the town, and it drives along the, I think it's the Crystal River. I'm not sure of the name. Anyhow, it's along a river. The road runs along a river, and there's a beautiful park between the road and the river.
Ooh, nice.
And just trees overhanging and wonderful old Victorian houses along on the other side of the road, and some very charming, like windmill, like Dutch type windmill figures in the park.
Stella, thanks a lot for that. Sound like anything else you encounter around the state, Kevin?
Well, gosh, the list is long. Elkhart Lake, I think, is another fine, beautiful destination with the resorts around that lake and the Road America. Lake Geneva, of course. These are kind of obvious, though, aren't they?
Sure. That's okay, though. That's okay. I think we have time, Kevin, for one more call. Carol is with us in Chippewa Falls. Carol, hi.
Hi.
Hello.
And are you? What are you nominating, Carol?
Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
Chippewa Falls. Okay, and make the case just briefly.
Well, we've got Leinenkugel's Brewery here. We've got a really nice little zoo and park in Irvine, and they just put up a new band shelter and stuff along the Chippewa River, and it's just really pretty.
Sounds great, Carol. A river runs through it, seems to be the theme of a lot of these.
A lot of
Kevin.
History and a great river, so...
One thing we haven't talked about is along the Mississippi River, and I'm a sucker for it. It's a different kind of architecture there, and the bluffs and the river. It's a winning combination for me. Any favorites for you?
Potosi.
Potosi. I haven't been there.
The home of the National Brewery Museum, and allegedly the longest main street in the United States. It kind of just curls through the bluffs there down to the just about to the river. I think it's a neat place and certainly a destination. It's got the visitor center for the Great River Road. And the National Brewery Museum and the brewery itself. So,
and just our last few moments, sounds like you'd make the case for us to stop by and check out that downtown instead of just bypassing it.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll leave it there, Kevin. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Kevin Revelinsky, also known as the Mad Traveler. His books include Backroads and Byways of Wisconsin. He was with us to talk about the prettiest towns in the state. Thanks for your calls. Right now it's time for Mondays with Mike. Each month, we ask one of our Mikes, either WPR Director Mike Crane or Director of Content Mike Arnold, to join Central Time or The Morning Show to bring us up to date on WPR programming and operations. We've got WPR Director Mike Crane in the studio with us today. He'll share news on some weekend schedule changes coming to the Ideas Network, among other things. And as always, we welcome your calls at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what you're hearing on Wisconsin Public Radio? Are there any programs you'd like to see us carry? What would improve your WPR experience? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Mike, welcome back to the show.
It's always good to be here. I want to jump on something right away, Rob.
Yeah.
We heard in the newscast the story about our colleagues down the street almost, WORT, having had a late night shooting. We're really, all of us here at WPR, our hearts go out to them. And, you know, we feel some of those same fears about what might happen here. So we try to keep things locked down. And today we were revisiting our measures to make sure that people are safe here at WPR as well. So our hearts go out to them, and we're very glad that there was no loss of life at WORT.
Yeah, and still watching for details on that story,
too.
So as we heard in the news, we'll keep hearing about that in our news breaks.
Yep.
Well, Mike, I understand we've got some changes coming to the weekend schedule, specifically on the Ideas Network side of things. Again, some people know, some people don't. We've got two networks, two broadcast networks, the Ideas Network and then the NPR News and Classical Music. So what's happening on the weekends on this side, the Ideas Network?
Well, so we're making a couple of changes, and you know, we'll definitely talk about this as we go through the half hour. Mm-hmm. It is always really hard to decide to let go of something in order to put something else on. And we are doing that in this case. It was announced earlier that the Kevin McKinley On Your Money segment was going away as a weekly thing anyway. And we're adding some really great programs, but others will go away. I'm excited about all of these programs. It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders is kind of a show covering news and pop culture. Sam Sanders, many people have heard either on the newscasts or if they listen to the News and Classical Network, they'd heard him on Morning Edition or All Things Considered. A great reporter, great conversationalist, and that's going to be replacing On the Media on Sunday mornings at 6 a.m. Hidden Brain. Now, a lot of people are familiar with Shankar Vedantam's work because he's been heard on lots of broadcasts. He also has the podcast by that name, Hidden Brain. And Hidden Brain will be on at 2 p.m. on Saturdays, where we had the repeat of the People's Pharmacy. And there's some more. Should I keep going?
Here's one. We've got this live wire show. We've got a little audio from the host, Luke Burbank, here. This is from a pledge spot, actually, but here he is talking about this show.
Our hope is that we are able to create week in and week out something that really sounds different on public radio. It sounds, I don't know, maybe a little corny, but within our kind of staff meetings, I always try to talk about Livewire as being the realest show in public radio. I don't know if that's grammatically correct or not, but I want to create a show that really creates actual genuine conversations and genuine moments of surprise and delight.
I've heard a lot of buzz about Livewire in the public radio world. What are we getting here?
Well, so it is kind of a variety show of sorts, but Luke Burbank, people have listened to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, will have heard him. He can be very funny, and he has great guests, and we've been thinking about this show for a while. One thing we've talked about a lot on the Monday with Mike segment is we'll be paying attention to what's going on around the public radio universe, and sometimes we're getting a lot of requests for something, or we found something we think people really like, and I think that'll be the case for Livewire. That's going to be at 4 p.m. on Saturdays, and that'll be instead of podcast playlist.
And then this newfangled show, I'm not familiar with it. To the best of our knowledge,
never heard of that
has
one,
a new spot on the ideas. But of course, that's from us here at Wisconsin Public Radio, a national show. That's got a new spot on the Ideas Network.
Yeah, that'll be 3 p.m. Saturdays. We are replacing Travel with Rick Steves, and all of these programs are still going to be found on podcasts and so on because they're continuing production, but we're changing our schedule. And there's one more I want to mention. We're flipping Garden Talk and the People's Pharmacy in the morning. So now Garden Talk will be at 6 a.m. and the People's Pharmacy at 7. And we're doing that so we can pair our two health shows together and have a kind of a bigger block. Zorba Pastor on Your Health. So we can have a bigger block of programs that are kind of related. That tends to help with radio broadcasts to group things together in that way. And we'll see.
Talking to Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio, about all things WPR. It's Mondays with Mike. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Larry is with us in Madison. Larry, hi.
Hi. I know that when Mike was on last time, there were a couple of calls in, more or less complaining that the weekend review was taken off. I want to give the other side of that. I'm glad to see it go. First of all, the main reason is we just didn't learn anything. We knew very well what was going to be said about the issues of the week, and I think a much better approach would be to find some sort of analysis of what's been going on. It doesn't have to be a debate. We could have people with different points of view and so on, but rather than just blatant partisanship, the airways are full of that right now on both radio and television.
Larry, thanks for the call. This is the Monday Ideas Network Friday 8 to 9 on the morning show. Was the Joy Cardine show before that long-running segment there.
Yeah, and it won't be a surprising, Larry, that we have people of different opinions than yours, as you're commenting on. I remember many years ago there was a segment on television. It was called Point Counterpoint. And the premise was that it would be two people who disagreed, and they'd debate an issue. Sometimes it got so it's like, yeah, I know what they're going to say. I'd like to see something else. And so I understand that comment. What I can say is that the morning show team, which has been almost entirely reconstituted, is almost all new people, a few people that are veterans of the Ideas Network. They're rethinking everything on the show because it's a great opportunity to do that. I've often said to people that, yes, we even right here in the building, we're uncomfortable with change many times. And if we stayed in that place and refused to ever change, it might be great that we still had a field with Ranger Mac and Let's Sing and Let's Draw and so on. But we wouldn't be doing all the great things we do now on the Ideas Network. And so we wrestle always with change. And there may be a different version of the Week in Review that comes back at some point, but at the moment they're just talking about it.
I can host the reboot of Let's Sing and Let's Draw. They'd be more accidental comedy shows than anything, though. Thanks, Larry, for that call. We'll go now to Cindy in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, I have two questions for you. First of all, I'm Well, I guess more of a comment. I'm a little upset that Kevin McKinley is leaving after all these years. She's a great financial advisor. And then on the money note, your event August 16th up in Door County is $75 for a ticket and then an $8.61 processing fee, which I don't understand why it would cost that much. $75 was kind of pushing the limit for me, but $83 is just overdone it.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Let's take those one at a time. Mike, the departure, as we've heard of On Your Money, the Tuesday morning and weekend show with Kevin McKinley.
Yeah, and last we talked to Kevin, and he's taking a little break. We expect he'll be back on our air more occasionally, not every week.
Ad hoc more.
Yeah, and yeah, he's a great financial advisor, and there are also many others that we're hoping to have on because financial advice remains something that's of great interest to our audience. And so I understand where Cindy's coming from on that. As for the processing fee thing, I understand the $75 price. We have some events that are priced in that range or even higher, other events that are free. We try to have some of different kinds and to make sure that we're at least defraying our cost overall. And sometimes there's a little bit of a fundraising part involved in that. The processing fee part is basically, it's kind of out of our control anymore. I notice this on things where I buy them online or whatever as well, and they seem to be a part of what vendors are doing to recoup their costs when we work with them. And I definitely will bring this to the attention of our teams in case there's a reason for us to select a different vendor or discuss it with the vendor. So thanks for the comments, Cindy, both of them.
Let's take a quick look before we go back to more callers, Mike. We've got a primary election coming up in Wisconsin, and we're in the midst of our election coverage. Do you want to round up a little bit of what we're doing here?
Yes, and one thing that I just love is to tell people we have been doing on the air since the 1930s, invitations to all people running for statewide office to come in, regardless of party. And usually they accept the opportunity to talk to our listeners. And so we have the primary election coming Tuesday, August 14th. So it's just a little bit away. And you can hear more about the candidates and ask them questions about the issues that are important to you. Sometimes during the morning show, sometimes during Central Time, and the primary races we're covering include all the statewide and federal offices with a primary challenger.
With a contested primary.
That's exactly right. So for governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, treasurer, U.S. Senate, and the House of Representatives in districts 1, 4, 5, and 7. And we'll cover all those races and more. Including attorney general and the other congressional districts as we get to the general election.
Right. And some people say, hey, wait, I haven't heard my candidate from my party. In most cases, that's because they don't have a primary challenger. We'll be inviting everybody in the general election come September, October.
Exactly right. And compiling all of them at WPR.org. So be sure to look there, too. If you missed one and really want to know, it'll be there for you over time.
And then election night, me and Sean Johnson, Frederica Freiberg will be the team for primary election night coverage.
August 14th, starting at 8 o'clock, and that'll be on all of our networks, including WPR.org. So be sure to tune in for that and then the coverage the next morning.
It's the August edition of Mondays with Mike. Mike Crane is with us, director of WPR, taking your questions, telling you the latest news from behind the scenes here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are you liking at WPR these days? What's missing the mark for you? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. WPR Director Mike Crane is with us for this edition of Mondays with Mike. We are talking about all things WPR. You can call in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Marty is on the line in Douglas County. Marty, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Well, hey, let's face it. Everybody's not going to like everything. So that you hit the mark 90% of the time in my life, thanks so much for that. It could be almost 100% if you were to add a show called American Roots. It's an amazing look at American music, headquartered out of New Orleans, but they hit all over the country. It's a great show. Would you consider that?
Possibly. I know only a little bit about the show because it's not something we've been looking at actively. And that's true of many, many shows. You know, one of the questions we've gotten here before on this segment is, for the Ideas Network in particular, why do you have any music shows at all? So that's one of the things we'd want to think about. Another challenge with the NPR News and Classical is that the more different formats, if you will, different kinds of music that we have, typically what happens for radio stations, and this is a huge dilemma for us, is that the more different formats you have, the more people tune out. And you think more would tune in, right? Well, the problem is if it's not their radio station when they've turned it on, oh, I don't like that. They may not come back. And so we're always trying to balance those things. I'm thrilled, Marty, that it's 90%. That's pretty good. Obviously not perfect. But thanks for the suggestion. And I will mention American Roots to the program team.
Thanks for the call, Marty. We'll go next to Michael in Kaukauna. Michael, hello.
Hey, I want to thank you guys for what you do for the state of Wisconsin. It's wonderful. We have several radios in our house that are worn out because they're stuck on WPR. And you take them off, they crackle. They don't work anymore except for WPR stations.
Just rip the knob off.
Exactly. The thing I have, there's a show that I love to death. It's called The Splendid Table. And it's a food show. It had been on the weekends in the past. I don't know if it's just too expensive for you guys. I've heard a lot of requests for it. And it's, the woman who does it, her voice is so fluid, it's so wonderful, and it's something that we really love, we'd like to hear come back.
Thanks for the suggestion. My recollection, because it was quite a while ago, Michael, that was on WPR, except for we have that Thanksgiving special, Turkey Confidential,
yeah.
Is that it? In terms of the audience response, there are certainly have been people that have been asking for it, but in general it wasn't that strong a response at the time. I think I've heard, and this maybe shows that I haven't focused on it in a while, I think I may have heard that Lynn Rosetto Casper was retiring. And so that's something I would want to check into before we'd consider bringing it back. Thanks for the comment, and I know exactly what you mean. I always thought that Lynn Rosetto Casper sounded a lot like Susan Stamberg from NPR, something of the same voice quality. So, again, I'll put that on the radar of the team. And we'll see, but it had not really had great response.
Michael, thanks for calling in. We've got Paul with us now in Whitewater. Paul, hi.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Paul?
Thank you for having this program and for talking about your program lineup. One question I have concerns, and I'd like to have this last, but one question I have is how do you make the changes you intend to make? How do you contact audience members about when you actually have programs on? But the comments I wanted to make were concerning specific programs. One was, I'm sorry to see Kevin McKinley's On Your Money go away. I can understand if Kevin is tired of doing the program for a while, but the program was truly an invaluable segment. Similarly, the People's Farm Scenes over Pasture are two invaluable programs about health. For those of us who are retired, these are great programs, and the fact that you had them at 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock on Saturdays was excellent. By pushing them so early in the morning, as I understand, these People's Pharmacy is not going to be repeated at 2 p.m. That's going to make it harder for people who get up later like we do.
Paul, thanks for the call. Mike?
Yeah, a bunch of things to unpack. Let's go to the People's Pharmacy part last. One of the things we were seeing is that when we look at the Nielsen figures, that the People's Pharmacy afternoon broadcast never did anywhere near as well as the morning broadcast. And so our hope is that we'll have concentrated excellence in the morning and maybe find a new opportunity, see if something else attracts more listeners in the afternoon. Thanks for the comments about Kevin. We've talked about that a lot. So I do want to jump to what's kind of contained in all of that, Paul, which is how do we make those changes? The fundamental challenge of doing broadcast is it's one thing sent out to everybody. And so we're always thinking about the balance between something very popular, but something maybe that helps a single group or a small group of listeners to really enjoy it and be attracted to it. And we just do try to balance it. We actually really do think that we are in a golden age of audio now that podcasting has become such an easy thing to do. It's on pretty much every mobile phone. You can have a podcast app and tune into things that you aren't finding on the radio. That part's really great. And so that's, we try to balance those things in deciding on a schedule. We're always getting requests for something we don't have on WPR, and so we have to think about, well, which thing would we take off in order to bring that program there, like the Sam Sanders program that we're bringing along. And we do our best to balance it is really what it comes down to.
Thanks, Paul. We'll go now to Dan in Milwaukee. Dan, hi.
Hi. So I was shocked to hear that you're dropping On the Media, which is my favorite and most thought-provoking national public affairs show that you broadcast. So what do I need to do to convince you to bring it back? And what do I need? Second question is, what do I need to do to communicate with you to protect other shows I enjoy so that I don't have to listen to a broadcast and suddenly learn it's being dropped too?
Yeah, certainly you're reaching out right now, which is great, and our program teams pay a ton of attention to what listeners are saying. In fact, Dan, you've reminded me there was another piece of Paul's comment that I meant to get to, which is, do we contact listeners to find out when they would like things on the schedule? And that hasn't ever really worked because everybody has a different preference. What we do find, though, and this relates to your comment, is that listeners contact us in droves to let us know what they think is the right schedule. And so I'd say, as it speaks to the programs you like, keep telling us about it. Tell your friends to tell us. And that's one of the kinds of data that we can use to try to make our best decisions.
Thanks, Dan, for the call. We'll go now to Chris in Milwaukee. Chris, hi.
Yes, hello. I just want everyone listening to know that Gertrude Stillman, who was known as Miss Trudy on Professor Gordon's program, passed away this week, and there is memorial for her in Milwaukee at St. John's on the Lake this Thursday. She was a dear, dear friend, and she always used to tease me. She said, oh, you were Miss Chris on television, but I was Miss Trudy on radio. And when I was a little girl, I remember in a one-room country school listening to Miss Trudy, who played the piano for Professor Gordon, who was our wonderful music man.
Oh, thanks so much for the call, Miss Chris. It's sad to learn about Miss Trudy's passing. An awful lot of the people that were broadcasting on what we would have called WHA in the day have passed on, and still we hear wonderful recollections of Let's Sing or Journeys in Music Land, which was sometimes the name of the show with Edgar Pop Gordon, and it was something I really enjoy reminiscing with listeners when I have the chance to talk with them, including you. So it's great to hear from you, Miss Chris.
Thanks a lot for the call. Mike, our segment is done now. People can still share their thoughts and questions, right?
Absolutely. We really do want to know what's on your mind. Really great way is really easy to pop off an email to listener@wpr.org. And you can look on the website for other ways to contact us. So please do.
listener@wpr.org. That emails our audience services department, just really feet from where we are right now. And they can help you out. Mike, thanks a lot for joining us.
Always great to be here. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
That's Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you didn't get a chance to talk to him today, he'll be back next month for another edition of Mondays with Mike on The Morning Show. He'll be talking to Kerry Kaufman in September. There's controversy in the world of pizza. A new U.S. pizza museum is in the works. The founder says the museum will be housed, at least at first, in Chicago, home of the deep dish pizza. And that's led to some defenders of New York style and other pizza to say, hey, it's not the right place to honor pizza and to claim that Chicago pizza isn't pizza, it's a casserole. Producer Rachel Vasquez is in here. You like Chicago pizza?
Well, I think I'm probably the best person to be talking about this at this moment because I just had my very first slice of authentic Chicago pizza.
Okay.
Last week. It was amazing. I loved it. I don't know if I love it more than regular pizza.
Right. The concern I have, I've had Chicago pizza in Chicago. It's tasty. It is dense.
Very.
Right? There's a lot of cheese. I'm in Wisconsin. I like cheese.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot of sauce to work with. You have to have a fork and knife, which can be a little bit annoying. I want to be able to take my pizza in my car, on the bus.
Hold it and fold
in
it.
The shower.
Earlier, with the New York pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
In the shower?
Yeah, you know, whenever.
Yeah, you never clean up that Chicago style pizza from the bathtub. I don't know. That's just never going to happen. So you're okay with the museum being in Chicago?
I'm fine with it.
You're fine with it.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Rachel. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.